promise that forever and yeah, we do it and we don't leave a trace. Ain't no resistance and we're both persistent, so we're giving in. Tonight's at the telly, breakfast at the telly, just can't get enough of it. You think like I do, do what I do, say what I do. It's like we share the same mind. You tell him lies, I tell her lies. This is why you're my partner in crime. Now she's cool with me hanging out with you, cause as a friend you're no threat. But if she knew, it wouldn't be long before she told your man. Risk of getting caught has got us caught up, but it's cool because we planned for all we thought of. To keep it straight, we never stray far from the plan. Now I can lie to everyone but you, cause only you can see when I'm being untrue. You think like I do, do what I do, say what I do. It's like we share the same mind. We think alike, baby. You tell him lies, I tell her lies. This is why you're my partner in crime.
My partner in crime.
That was a shame that this couldn't be legitimate. But if it was, then you think we'd be as into it, my baby. Kind, on the same page, hotter than hot. But do you ever think what happens, girl, if we ever get caught? You think like I do.
Evan Ginsberg back with Legends Radio, and you've been listening to the music of my buddy Roger Ortega. He's a talented young man, and he'll be with us 9 p.m., singer, songwriter, producer, he does it all, and a great showman. That's what I appreciate. You know, a lot of people get on a stage and they kind of just stand there, or even worse, just sit there. Roger knows how to put on a show, and yours truly is jaded, having seen the very, very best, Al Green, James Brown, Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, etc., so on live. So when I say I enjoy somebody's show, it's a high compliment indeed. And speaking of jaded, we have with me Dr. Mike Leno. How are you tonight, Mike?
Oh, I'm not jaded. We are trying to get Ali Wong, who's at the Punchline in San Francisco, and Brian Posehn. We've got a little bit later. My editor for a million years, he's the chief editor of Pro Wrestling Illustrated and that whole family of magazines, Frank Cruda. And I'm not jaded about America's Got Talent. I was just telling Evan and Rick the tapings with Howard Stern when they came to San Francisco. They did 2 weeks ago, a Friday and a Saturday, and I was the only press there, so that was kind of cool for all four. So I got to take pose shots of them at their desk and all of that. And that show will be returning to NBC in May. Terrific show. Howard Stern adds a whole lot. One thing I want to do, of course, before forgetting and getting into too much stick, is to dedicate the shows to both legendary Woody Farmer, who passed away. He was 76. And at only 52, Doug Furness, a member of Crawford and Furness, they were one of the top tag teams ever in All Japan. They came to ECW and WWF, where Crawford, who took the name of Stu Hart's top babyface in the 60s and 70s, went to, by his real name of Phil LaFon. But we'll talk about both with Frank Cruda. And for those who want to come to Woody Farmer's service, the family still hasn't decided, but they're thinking April 15th for a memorial for Woody. One movie that I want to plug and push, I think both you guys will enjoy as well as our audience, is Casa de Mi Padre with Will Ferrell. Saw a screener of it. He was in San Francisco. I didn't get to interview him, but he was in a hotel, you know, conducting interviews, which they usually do, like in New York and L.A. and stuff. But it really looks funny. And the best part about it is Mondo Guerrero has a lengthy recurring character line in it where he has quite a bit of spoken dialogue. So this is the thing where they don't speak any English. It's all very poor Spanish by at least the American comedians in it. And then Mondo and the rest of them are speaking obviously perfect Spanish. But Mondo has that big famous table scene where they're all dining together that's in all the trailers. And asked him, and he said he had a really cool time. He got a great paycheck, but he even more so, he had a lot of fun with that. So,
You know what I love, Dr. Mike? I'm totally addicted to The Walking Dead on AMC. Have you been watching that?
I've seen two episodes. It's really good stuff.
Oh, my God, you got to see it. You got to see it every week, man. You watch the show, and you just go, they ate the fourth lead. They ate the seventh lead. The second lead just got it. It's like if you were watching Star Trek and like they knocked off Uhura and Dr. McCoy. You know, it just blows your mind when you see this show. It's an awesome show, and even better, it's written well, and you care when the characters die. You actually care. You're saddened. You're moved. You know, it's amazing. It's like George Romero. The only way to compare it is it's like a George Romero zombie movie where you care about the characters because it's done as art. It elevates it beyond what it really is. It's tremendous. It's tremendous television. If you haven't seen it, you know, get it when the DVD's released or watch it on iTunes or whatever the case may be. But I believe we're due for your first guest, Dr. Mike. So before we get to
the chat. Before I forget, though, maybe we can talk about this when we come back at some point in the show. The movie that was just like Night of the Living Dead, I forget which one came first. Children Should Not Play with Dead Things, which had zombies eating up everybody and killing off the people in the house one by one. I'm assuming that was a ripoff of George Romero.
I vaguely remember it. I always like zombies better than mummies for some reason. It's just, you have personal choices and priorities in life. So, anyway, let's go to Dr. Mike's first guest. We'll be right back in 1 second. But before that, just want to remind everybody that Legends Radio is heard each and every Wednesday, 7 to 9:20 Eastern Standard, archive 24/7. Visit our website at legendsradio.net. Check out our store. Check out my book, Apartment 4B Like in Brooklyn, about the turbulent 60s. And 70s. Tons of great wrestling merchandise on the site. And the opinions, the comments of anyone else in the show, not necessarily shared or endorsed by yours truly. And with all of that out of the way, we will be right back, folks. Thank you for listening to Legends Radio.
You're looking good tonight. You're feeling good tonight. It's going down tonight. All right. Hair done, nails did.
Looking like a killer.
One glance, I'm dead.
I can see you really wanna
be out with your girl tonight. Your man at home,
sitting like a statue,
you all alone.
He ain't getting at you.
If I was him, I'd be loving that body right.
If you want a good romance, a real romance, go to the club and get the chance.
Give me a chance to sing to you what your man at home won't do.
Calling all girls to the floor, put your hands up,
cause you're beautiful,
put your hands up.
Your man ain't around, he doesn't lay it down, he doesn't call you pretty,
but I do.
Calling all girls to the floor, put your hands up,
so damn beautiful,
put your hands up.
Your man ain't around, he doesn't lay it down, he doesn't make you
chance.
Stand in the corner.
When you look like that,
I can see you really wanna.
Let's go, just hang loose tonight. Your vibe's on fire,
I can make you hotter.
If you need a drink, baby,
I can be your water.
I'll get you soaking wet tonight.
If you want a good romance,
give me a chance to sing to you what your man at home won't do.
Calling all girls to the floor. Put your hands up.
Cause you're beautiful.
Put your hands up.
No man ain't around. He doesn't lay it down, babe.
He doesn't call you friends.
I do.
Calling all girls to the floor. Put your hands up.
So damn beautiful.
Put your hands up.
No man ain't around. He doesn't lay it down. He doesn't make you high.
Get me on speed dial, hit pound 7. Cause every round I pound, you found heaven. Nickname, hitman with a home run, stick game. Bet bond to bond, bond, till it's a lip flame. Can't go crazy, two bags in a suitcase. Even when I'm lazy, who's bragging, it's true, babe. Your cup running over like Stevie Wonder was pouring. Believe me, like this is roaring, drought jeans is good morning.
Good romance, real romance.
Everybody, our next guest probably doesn't remember. He was on the show about 2-3 years ago promoting, I think, when he was on Sarah Silverman. But I recall I was actually the only press shooting when he came up with the Mr. Show troupe, and they were at the Warfield on Market. It was a Market Street. I don't know how many years ago, 2002. Just out of this world, insanely funny. Of course, Sarah Silverman, comedians of comedy with Patton Oswalt. He is one of the planet's experts on comic books. Everything funny and creative. And Brian Posehn is at Cobb's this Friday through Sunday, Cobb's Historic Comedy Club in San Francisco. And Brian, welcome back to the show. And looking at your site right now, some very cool artwork. It looks like fart and wiener jokes. Is that a CD or DVD?
Yeah, a CD I put out almost 2 years ago now. I'm right in the process of, I'm actually recording my new CD and special at the end of April. So there'll be a third album coming out soon. That record's been out a little while ago, but still hilarious.
Yeah, still hilarious. As is, I'm so bummed, as are probably pretty much everybody that is intelligent and loves all things intelligent as it relates to comedy, the Sarah Silverman show, where you're just brilliant. And I was trying to recall some of my favorite episodes, and all of them were great, but one of them that involved you as a central character was the robot baby, the killer robot baby. It had some amazing music behind it, and everything about it from start to finish was great. Was there any reason Comedy Central, they seem to have shows that are just great, and then 2 to 3 years, you know, that's it. I don't know what, you know, I'm not knocking them. It gets very frustrating.
Well, I know, and it's a weird thing because I keep going back to them. I've had pilots and other things with them. Part of the problem is they don't promote that well, and so that really hurt us. And then also, like, those last four episodes of the last run we did, people didn't even know where we were. They had moved the time around, and then they had aired this thing had been published in TV Guide saying that our last episode was airing, and we still had four episodes to air.
Wow.
So just little things like that kind of hurt us. And the big thing is, kids, you know, it makes me sound so old, but a problem now, especially with Comedy Central and places like that, is people don't watch it the first time it airs because there's so many different ways of watching TV now, you know, whether it's watching it later, you know, on a thing like Hulu or some other thing on the web, you know, that kind of hurts us, or iTunes purchases and stuff like that. So they kind of weren't able to justify how expensive our show was. That's the other thing. Like, so much of that network is really cheap, and we had high production value, so our show was one of the most expensive things on the network, and they just, at the end of the day, you know, couldn't justify it. And it sucks, but we, as especially as a writer and an actor on the show, I just felt lucky that we were able to do what we got to do, because we almost didn't come back for a third season. So the fact that we were able to do some of the crazy stories that we did, you know, I just feel fortunate that we did that.
Yeah, I get it. Well, brilliant. My mom lives there, too, right off Laurel Canyon. And I was always telling her, look around. She never did come across you guys filming in Valley Village. But yeah, it was just so amazing. And it's frustrating because I'm sure you guys are probably working for scale. And I don't know how much Jon Stewart or Colbert make. They can't be draining everything Howard Stern-like from Comedy Central. But, you know, whatever. Right. There was more stuff, too.
Well, it definitely wasn't the actors that were eating up the budget. The budget on our show was all on the, you know, on the screen. It was just getting the fact that how well-directed it was and, you know, all the other little video pieces and little animation, that stuff really ate up the budget.
Yeah, there was some FX going on, like Sarah Paul in the air. Very cool stuff. But Mr. Show, I don't know if it was your experience with HBO similar. Were they cheap there? Because you hear Bill Maher talk about that. And there was some very cool stuff, but I don't think it was as expensive to produce Mr. Show for HBO.
No, that was part of the reason why we got to go on, is our director was really good at shooting things on the cheap and making it look cool and filmic. A lot of times back then, it was one of my first experiences in TV. And I didn't know that every show did this, but we would steal shots, which to me is we wouldn't get permits sometimes. We would jump out of a van. Seriously, it was like guerrilla style, where we would just jump out of a van, run up to a location, and then shoot it in like 10 minutes and then get out before the cops came.
Some current show or movie was, they were showing that on one of those trashy things like Extra. They were showing that and they were admitting it. So I'm sure that's more common than anybody would, you know, like to think.
My first experience in no other shows I've ever done that did that were that cheap. But maybe it was something to do with my producer and director. He just, you know, thought we could save a lot of money by doing that.
You guys didn't do that on Comedians of Comedy, where you're basically touring the country, I think, in a bus, from what I remember?
Yeah, well, I think for documentaries, you don't need, you don't need to get the same, you don't have to go through the same legal hoops.
Well, very cool. Everybody, we honored to have Brian Posehn back on the show Friday through Sunday at San Francisco's Cobbs Comedy Club. Go to CobbsComedy.com. And Evan Ginsberg, no stranger to comedy in New York City, I'm sure is a big fan of you as well.
Absolutely. And I love the Sarah Silverman Show and what you guys did on it. And I have a question. Sarah is just so brilliant and beautiful, et cetera, so on. And I'm obviously telling you nothing you don't know already. Does comedy sometimes not translate, let's say, in another country? Because I heard she didn't get over as well in England in one particular gig.
Yeah, I wasn't there for that. So I could see certain references, or I don't know what she did to kind of lose them. But I remember hearing from some friends that went along for the ride that it didn't go as badly as everybody made it sound, actually.
Gotcha.
And then my experience in England, I went and did stand up there, and my act is what it is, but I got a lot of mileage out of kind of making fun of the differences and going, hey, do you got, you know, we got speed bumps. What do you guys call them? You know, just kind of any setup where I felt like, I had to spell out, I go, you guys masturbate, right? Like, what do you call that? You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. My
got a lot of mileage of my American act. Let's see if it flies over here, but, you know.
That's funny. My cousin is British, and when he comes over here, he'll just go, Letterman's not funny. He'll go, this guy's not funny, that guy's not funny. And they're huge stars here, and it just seems
right.
that there's a different sense of humor to some degree.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
and,
for sure.
Yeah. And when you look back at your career, you've done so much already. What are some of the highlights?
Well, you've already mentioned, too, I mean, honestly, as far as TV, my favorite things that I've done are Mr. Show and Sarah Silverman. And then Comedian to Comedy is another one that you mentioned. And then stand-up. I mean, I get a lot of enjoyment out of it. And I love the videos I've gotten to do. You know, Metal by Numbers. And then I also did this other one, More Metal Than You. Getting to write songs with Scott Ian from Anthrax has been, you know, something that I never could have predicted. You know, I was an Anthrax fan when I was in high school, so that's a weird turn that my career took that, you know, I'm super thankful for. And then I've been working with Judd Apatow the last couple of years, so I helped out on Funny People, and that was a blast. I did some of the writing for you know, it was about two stand-ups, so he had Patton Oswalt and myself write some of the stand-up jokes for those for that movie, and that was a lot of fun. And now I'm in one called 5-Year Engagement that comes out in April that Judd produced, and is the best thing I've done as far as film work. You know, I've had a lot of success in TV, but so far I usually have very small parts in movies.
Interesting. And When someone's a stand-up comedian and known for being funny, let's say like an Albert Brooks, he recently played a villain and was absolutely brutal and tremendous, and the role was critically acclaimed. Do you get pigeonholed as somebody who's funny? Let's say, for example, you know, could you get a film lead as a, you know, romantic lead, for example?
Well, I'd probably have to write that myself. But I mean, as far as dramas, I do get the opportunities. I've had auditions for things that are sort of kind of out of my wheelhouse, but would be fun, you know. I definitely get brought in for the serial killer parts on CSI and things like that because I have a certain look.
Yeah.
So far, I haven't done one of those parts yet. But, no, I mean, that's definitely something I really want to do at some point. But on the other hand, you know, I can still sleep at night because I feel really lucky with all the parts that I have been given, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dr. Mike.
And someone Ev didn't mention, he's talking about beautiful and funny, Sarah's sister, Laura, who I've seen on other TV. I don't know if she's done movies. I'll assume she has. She's awesome, too. I mean, everybody you work with, it seems like Brian is always surrounding himself with or is in the midst of creative brilliant people, and Brian,
well,
I don't know what you think of.
Go ahead.
Oh no, you go ahead. I was interrupting you.
Well, I was going to say a big part of that is who I made friends with 15, 20 years ago. I mean, the fact that I came up with guys like Patton Oswalt and Sarah. I've known Sarah since she was 19. I'm just really lucky that those were my friends, and we'll always kind of continue to work together. I mean, when I've had opportunities to bring my friends in, that's the first thing I do is hire my funny friends. And I have like a great pool of people to draw from. And I think that's what they've done too, you know.
Did you start doing stand-up or more improv and writing or a little bit of everything?
Well, I started as a stand-up. But at that point, it was the late 80s, early 90s. And stand-up was sort of dying, and I was living in San Francisco, and clubs were closing, and a couple of my friends and myself realized that we had to do other stuff, you know, so we just started writing sketches and with the idea of moving to L.A. for writing jobs, and then I just sort of fell into everything else. I mean, I didn't move to L.A. to act ever. I just didn't think I, you know, could be on screen and people would be happy about it, you know, but I just sort of fell into that and, you know, had a casting director see me doing stand-up when I first moved down here and then just immediately started booking sitcom parts. But that was never part of the plan. But the plan did include, you know, branching out into writing.
Well, you do such a brilliant job with that. Who are some people not in your circle? And I'm going to assume maybe one of the people you went down there with was a mutual friend, Tom Kenny, who does a million voices and SpongeBob and everything else. Because he was part of that scene, too. You know, a lot of people was huge on the San Francisco comedy scene here, you know, as were a lot of guys.
Well, Dana Gould is one. He moved around and moved down around the same time. Greg Barrett was a good friend of mine. Margaret Cho, I think, made the move first. We were all in San Francisco, and she started to get cast in things. And she came down, I think, first. And then there were friends like that didn't live in San Francisco but were up there all the time, like Janine Garofalo and David Cross. I met them from them coming through and playing at the San Francisco Improv, the one that used to be on Mason and Geary. And then that was kind of our hangout for a while. And then guys like Greg Proops that went on to be in, you know, all over. And who else am I forgetting? Well, Patton, of course. Patton and myself, we came down right around the same time. I took an MTV job first, and then he was right behind me for a thing on Fox.
Can anybody explain what somebody you probably know, Larry Bubbles Brown, why didn't he not take off?
Man, I love that guy. I loved him back then, and I hope I see him this weekend. Every once in a while when I'm up there, he'll come by and go, buddy, you know and he's just immediately owns the room when he walks in. But, you know, I think that's him. I think he could have made the leap. He just never, you know, I don't know. You'd have to ask him. I, on the other hand, was, you know, I panicked when the clubs started closing in San Francisco, and I wasn't a headliner yet. He was able to headline at that point, and I was like, well, how am I going to make a living? You know, I'm 24, 25. I don't have any real skills. You know, but I could be funny. So that's what I did, was just made that move with the idea of getting into writing, you know, but, and a lot of my friends did too. But the guys that stayed there, I think they, were happy with, you know, the place they were. You know, San Francisco is a great place to live and, you know, I still had, you know, a couple of viable clubs even when half of them closed, you know.
There's been actually a resurgence besides yourself at Cobb's this weekend, Ali Wong at Punchline. Tommy T's in Pleasanton, they opened now a second division right in, I think, Union Square. So
right.
Starting to pop back. We're getting, you know, we don't have Holy City Zoo where Robin Williams started, but clubs are popping back. The movie that you're working on, actually, I forget, it's two really famous leads, 5-Year Engagement. Can you tell us anything about that?
Yeah, it's a romantic comedy. It's Jason Segel and Emily Blunt.
That's right.
And I just saw it about 3 weeks ago, and it came out really great. I mean, it's a romantic comedy, but not the scary kind that you don't want your girlfriend to drag you to. You know what I mean? It's actually really, really funny. And I play one of Jason Segel's friends, and it was just a lot of fun for me. And it wound up being a bigger part than it was written, and we wound up improvising a lot, like they do in a lot of the Apatow films, where, you know, stick to the script, but then we'll do takes where we just kind of, as they say, have fun with it, you know?
Jed is amazing. Everything, he's like Midas. Every movie he touches is usually just
pretty
out
much.
Of this world. Go to Brian Posehn, I hope I'm not screwing up that last name, P-O-S-E-H-N. What, is that a Scandinavian name?
It's German, yeah.
German.
Well, so close, yeah.
And, of course, let's see, this Friday through Sunday, are you doing double shots Friday and Saturday?
Yeah, so Friday I think it's 8 and 10, 15, and I believe Sunday is 7 and 9:30.
You want to get your tickets because it'll be sold out. What will you be – you don't do political stuff. What can we expect from you? It's probably comics and music and geekdom, which actually now is mainstream. I think everybody is a geek. Everybody loves Spider-Man movies and, you know, all of this vampires. And so it's not counterculture. It is the culture. Everybody loves Anthrax and Megadeth. I think Megadeth and Motorhead are touring together this summer, and Ozfest is coming back.
Well, the act isn't so much about that anymore. I mean, I definitely reference the things I love in my act, but it's transitioned into, I think, being a little more relatable, like, because now my life is more relatable, and so I talk so much about what I'm going through, the fact that, you know, I'm this immature guy, but I'm in my 40s now, and I had to man up, you know, I have a kid and a wife, and so a lot of the material comes from that stuff now, and then being, you know, kind of this ex-stoner that still plays video games and still, you know, or doesn't get strip clubs anymore. I just kind of mind everything that I go through in life. You know, when I quit pot, I suddenly had 10 new minutes, you know, and hopefully that's relatable to people who've had to make a similar choice, you know.
Well, I guess last thing, Brian, are you a DC or a Marvel man?
I'm both. I was one of those weird kids that made that choice because I never felt like I had to. In the beginning, Batman and Spider-Man, so I was drawing from both, you know, both labels. And I'm actually doing work for Marvel this summer, which I'm really excited about. So I'm writing one of their titles, which you can't totally see right now, but we haven't formal announcements yet, but for me, it's insane that I get to, you know, be involved in this company that I grew up loving, you know.
That's amazing. Well, congratulations on everything, successful writing, everything you do, Midas as well. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Everybody thanks you for all of the great comedy, great everything that you've been putting out for years and years and years. Go see him at Cobb's this Friday through Sunday, the great Brian Posehn, who is a young legend. Our show is called Legends. You're definitely a young legend that we love. And with that, we're going to take a short time out. Come right back with more Legends Radio.
Looking fly in the mirror, I'm anticipating what we're doing tonight. Plan is to pick you up, take you out on the town, and we gon' do it right. Do it right. I know that you've been waiting, I've been waiting too. So let's grab these plans tonight and do what we wanna do. Cause I can't wait to get up to you and give love to you again. No, I can't wait and do everything we can. Cause I can't wait any longer. You're burning me up and I don't wanna cool down. No, I can't wait any longer. I'm needing your body and I'm needing you now. Cause I can't wait.
Ain't got no time to be wasting. Ain't no hesitating. What we gonna do now? And I'd be remiss if I didn't get it right now.
Chest, I can feel your beating heart. lights go down and we make it dark. Radio on and the clothes come off. Like Marvin, let's get it on. Oh, oh, oh.
I can't wait to touch you, to kiss you. I can't wait to love you, to hug you.
Cause I can't wait to get up to you and give up to you again. No, I can't wait to do anything and do everything we can.
All right, everybody, we've been talking about our two great, tremendous, young, legendary comics tonight. Brian Posehn, we just got done with. One of my favorites, she's on the new Chelsea Handler show. Chelsea, is that you? Of course, from the Are You There, Vodka? It's Me, Chelsea book. Ali Wong, who killed, absolutely killed when she was on the Tonight Show. And I forgot how great it was. Went back and watched it.
Thanks so much.
No.
A funny story is that I did it last July, but I had gotten offered to do it last May, and it was the same day as my boyfriend's graduation from Harvard, and I was like, God, I could do the Tonight Show and get a TV credit, or I could go to my boyfriend's graduation from Harvard and poke a hole in the condom.
What is
going to guarantee the most steady income?
Well, you're set for life with him, but he was cheap. You said he just got you a beaded bracelet. Has he gotten you some better presents since
then?
He
has. He has, through my passive-aggressive ways of communicating that he has bad manners to the people of America, he has gotten me better gifts.
That's
kind of
neat.
There's still bracelets with stones on them, but then now they're stones and not food.
Yeah, well, I hope there's a nice ring because you deserve it. You had another, and speaking of that, and we don't often see, you know, it's men always talking about the relationship with women, but your great line at the end of a date, when the woman reaches for a purse, that reach is fake. I was on the floor. I was in
the floor. It's true.
Are guys that cheap? Are they still? I mean, you're a San Francisco girl, and I'm over in Alameda, even though our show is national. I know you have a lot of tour dates, but you're coming back home. But, you know, like Margaret Cho, was it true that the Bay Area guys are cheap?
Oh, my God. They're so cheap because they know that the market is rough for us because it's all gay dudes. So that we don't have that much to choose from, so that they can get away with taking us to some, you know, they can take us to like some like food establishment where you order at the counter and then they make you go Dutch. It's horrible.
I thought I was in heaven because I moved up from LA up here to go to dental school right in the heart of San Francisco, and there was always beautiful women, but I always took them to, like, Opera Plaza, and I must have been an idiot. Took them to the expensive places, Ernie's, that old restaurant, that stuff. I'm in the minority, white straight guy up here. But it's great for guys like Alaska. But it's not great for women.
Oh, yeah, you just have your pick because, you know, there's so many, like, when I was single in San Francisco, there were so many guys who were so good-looking that I was attracted to, and then either they were being nice to me because they were gay and they loved me, or they wanted to, you know, get me, they were Jehovah's Witnesses or something like that and wanted to get me to join their club.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, that's the thing in San Francisco. I don't know why all these women keep hanging out with gay dudes, because it's just teasing yourself.
I guess maybe it's like Joan Rivers. It's for the help with makeup and costume design.
Yeah.
I should point out all of this stuff, all of these awards you've won for those in the Northern California, from SF Bay Guardian, Best of the Bay, SF Weekly, Best Comedian of 2009, Variety magazine named you 10 comedians to watch. You've done.
Yeah, that was last year.
And
it's
now,
crazy, you know, because I've been working hard. Like, I mean, I started 7 years ago, and I started just doing like the open mic circuit in San Francisco, and it's really cool that, you know, San Francisco's always been really supportive of me along the way. But I had to move out of there like 3 years ago, and I was sad to leave, but I had to do it.
Right, but now you've got that huge role on a major NBC show, which is, how is that transition from stand-up and writing to, do you contribute any of the writing or just the acting talent?
No, not at all, no. I mean, it's like, it's very, I would say it's very strict. I mean, Chelsea Handler improvises a lot, but it's because it's Chelsea. But for a multi-cam project that's in front of a live studio audience, there's not too much room to improv because it's all live, and when you have the camera set up in that way, you have these marks. You have these, you know, tape marks, like my tape is always the yellow tape, which is a little bit racist.
That's racist.
And I'm just, you know, I have to step on marks on certain lines, and the camera people have, like, schedules of when to turn it this way and that, so it's like you don't have that much room to improvise. And they have a writing staff, so to, like, you know, improvise is almost kind of disrespectful to them as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's amazing because I'm used to writing, acting, and directing all of my own material, and there it's like you just show up and you say other people's words, and it's really different, and it's performing during the daytime is also really surreal. But I love it, and it's great.
That's amazing. Well, I'm going to bring up Evan in New York City, but we were talking before bringing you up about you being, how many times, is probably too many to count, on Chelsea's regular show, Chelsea Lately.
Oh, I've actually only been on there 4 times. I was there for the 4th time last Monday. I know, it's crazy, but that's the best thing about being on that sitcom is that, that I get to be on Chelsea Lately now, and that I get to be on that round table, because I think that show has been on air now for, I don't know, they just celebrated their 800th episode maybe a couple months ago, and they're very set with their round table. I mean, they rarely have anybody new on that round table, so I'm very honored and lucky that I get to be on that show, because it's amazing for stand-ups. It's one of the best platforms, I think, for us, and there aren't that many.
Yeah, I think most people say Conan's show and Chelsea is the most comic friendly. Let's bring up Evan in New York, who loves comedy.
Absolutely. And since you were discussing it earlier, I was just wondering, as a comedian, if somebody's dating and they're meeting all kinds of colorful characters, is that better for material than to be involved or married, where, you know, there's just less people in and out of your life?
Well, I'd say that, like, now I'm in a relationship, and I have so much more to say about that than from when I was single, because now I can identify with women who try to strong-arm the man into marrying them, and I didn't, like, get that before. So, I mean, and then men can identify with being strong-armed into getting married, and I totally... You know, it's just like being older. Your material changes, and it's nice to kind of grow up and stand up as well as in my own life too. But yeah, all this, I still have all those sex stories from when I was single, so I can still bust those out if I want to. But I'm really enjoying talking about relationships too.
There you go. I hope this isn't offensive in any way, but my wife is Korean, and what I find in New York is you have beautiful Asian women with ugly white guys. Do you ever see that out there?
Yeah. Oh my God! New York. I lived in New York for 2 years, and that place is turning into a Yoko Ono factory.
Yeah.
So has San Francisco. I mean, that's really common. And it's so funny because, I mean, and Jewish dudes. Let me guess. Are you Jewish much, Evan?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
I couldn't hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, a lot of Asian women will give other Asian women flack and be like, oh, I don't understand why you're dating that white dude, because you know he doesn't like you for you. He only likes you because he has a fetish. And my response is always, I'll take what I can get. You know, I don't care. Wow. But yeah, that's like a big, that's a big trend in San Francisco and Los Angeles. It sucks for Asian men. I don't know what the deal is. I think that maybe, hopefully Jeremy Lin will change all of that. That's what I'm hoping for. Because I find Asian men very, very sexy. My boyfriend's Asian. But a lot of Asian women find that they're like, they just like these like nerdy white dudes. And I'm like, could you pick someone who looks a little less like Harry Potter?
Wow. Wow. I'm starting to see more Asian guys with white women in New York. It's becoming more of a trend recently, but usually it was Asian women with white guys. I don't know. I couldn't explain it, but that's just from walking down the street what I've seen.
Yeah, but then the white men, women sometimes don't end up being that sexy. It's like the same ordeal where it was like they were the last pick of the team too. Like the white dudes end up being super nerdy, and then the white women who end up with Asian dudes end up being like the librarian with chunky camel toe.
Wow. Oh. That's rough. That's rough.
It's bad.
Anyway, I always like to ask this question. When you look at your career, you're still quite young. What are some of the highlights?
Well, I would say, I got to this year go to the Golden Globes and help co-host the E! After Party. And it was on live TV, and it was my first experience ever doing live television. And, you know, we were just improvising and talking about fashion. It was really, it was really fun. So that was, like, a huge, huge highlight. I think going to all the music festivals and performing there is amazing as well, because since I perform at night, I rarely get to see live music. And because I'm Chinese, I'm always too cheap to pay for live music. So it's been pretty great to see bands like Li Yili and The Joy Formidable and Toro Yimuan go to all these great music festivals and perform there, but then also just essentially spend the whole day listening to live music.
And is a music crowd tougher for a comedian? Because I once saw a comedian absolutely die opening for a famous band, and I was just wondering if that's a tougher crowd because they're there for the music generally.
Yeah, I think sometimes I've had good and bad sets, but I think because I started like kind of like a classic comedian in open mics, and that started in place in San Francisco, like where you have to really, you have to lasso in a crowd and really tame people, that performing in front of a noisy audience that's not fully paying attention is no stranger to me. So I think for people who like come from a more like theater environment and were very like kind of coddled, I think it's kind of difficult, but, no, it's not too hard. So, yeah. But also because I'm dirty and they love that.
There you go.
There
you go. Yeah. And you want to know something? School teachers do that with kids all the time. It's an audience that doesn't want to listen to them. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Dr. Mike.
And Allie, of course, starting tomorrow night, Thursday through Saturday, is at the Punchline, historic Punchline in San Francisco. You had one of the great lines. So I think you're Chinese American and your boyfriend is Filipino, if I'm not mistaken.
I'm half Chinese and half Vietnamese, and he's half Filipino and half Japanese. So we're both half fancy Asian and half jungle Asian.
Because in San Francisco, it's like you have to speak a little. I always forget which umgoi or doje, which is thank you in Cantonese. I think one is if you give it.
Oh yeah, very good.
And one is just a generalized thank you. But you had the greatest line, when you date within your race, you can go home and be racist, something like that. And obviously,
absolutely.
We're so openly accepting of everybody. Almost all of my wife's friends are all multiracial. But that was like one of the greatest lines. I still crack up, and I re-cracked up when I heard you say it. So the beautiful and talented Allie Wong, Punchline this Thursday through Saturday, and then every week on NBC on the Chelsea Is That You show. And but you've got to be back on Chelsea lately for appearance number 5, hopefully. Because
I'm on there every month now, so I'll be there April 16th.
All right, and AllieWong.com is her site. She is one of the more tech-friendly sites. There's Twitter, Facebook, there's everything on there. Share, I'm looking at it right now. She has one of those hats that you see everybody selling on Market Street now, the little animal winter hats.
They're great. They have these on the paws, you can stick your hands in them. So, like, not only do you have the head of the animal, you can have, like, the paws, too.
And I should warn you, we're having the rain. You'll bring that hat up because we are having it's flooding up here. We've had nonstop rain since like Monday morning. Has not stopped.
Oh, no! Oh, I'm not looking forward to the weather in San Francisco. I forgot.
All right. Allie Wong, this starting tomorrow at the Punchline. She's terrific. The shows are going to be sold out. Get your tickets now. And we're going to come right back with Frank Cruda here on Legends Radio.
Angel by your side at all times.
We are back here on Legends Radio, and I wanted to have our next guest on. He's a longtime historian, a longtime executive editor for the whole, I mean, it's the best wrestling magazine on the planet, the family of magazines, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, The Wrestler Inside Wrestling. I've got in my hands the brand new 2012 Wrestling Almanac and Book of Facts, which is just labor intensive. A lot of detail goes into this. And Frank Cruda, I want to bring you aboard and ask, how did you get involved in wrestling? I'm always interested in long term, you know, you're a lifer like myself. But did you start the typical way, watching Bruno matches on TV, or how did you start becoming a fan and then get into magazine work?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned watching Bruno, because I have a my great grandmother on my mother's side was from Italy, and for as long as I can remember, you know, I was born in 1970, so as long as I can remember, being in her company, if wrestling was on and Bruno was on, that's what we watched. So Bruno was kind of a staple as far as wrestling. My parents weren't particularly fond of wrestling, but my great grandmother sure was. So, you know, going back to maybe 74, 75, it was just something that, you know, a habit I got into on Saturday mornings. Get up, eat breakfast, watch the matches. And growing up in South Philadelphia, literally within walking distance of the old Spectrum and later on the ECW Arena, I was able to attend cards each month. And so I was exposed to it pretty consistently from a very early age. And, of course, the magazines were also available. I was lucky enough to have an aunt who worked at a newsstand. And anytime they had to, you know, clean off their shelves, I got stacks and stacks of the after mags, as they say.
Because they were really Stanley Weston mags, but I'm a lot older than you, and he was brilliant. I mean, really the first glorious, glamorous wrestling review with the color inserts and spectacular, the pinups, the Graham Brothers and Buddy Rogers and Carpentier, all of that great stuff. Tradition. You guys, I think, you know, like CMLL is the world's oldest wrestling company. You guys have to be the oldest continuous wrestling magazine producer in the world.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, going back to the early 60s, I believe, The Wrestler and Inside Wrestling and Wrestling Review, as you mentioned, you know, we have our critics. There's no doubt about it. And what we do and the manner we do it in is not going to make everyone happy. We realize that, but when you're around as long as we are, you have to realize that must have been doing something right all these years, because a lot of competitors have come and gone, and you know, when they go away, that's not necessarily good for the publishing industry or wrestling for that matter. But you know, we're still here and we're still chugging along and turning out magazines in the same kind of style that we always have. Now, you know, naturally, as wrestling audience evolved and the business kind of exposed itself, you know, we've had to adjust. There's no question about that. But, you know, the feedback we get in the office is there are far more people who still enjoy and like what we do than not. So, you know.
No, and the interviews, too. I've made a point over the years, when you guys started first doing shoot interviews, which is different than maybe the interviews in the 70s or early 80s. Right. Now when you have an interview with a Terry Funk, et cetera, they're shoot. And, you know, you've got almost regularly the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame will spotlight somebody. You'll have that. And I think, you know, besides the collectability of them, and the fact that there's so many, you know, really there's nobody else that is covering Ring of Honor, Chikara. There's a lot of indie stuff. I think everybody looks forward to the top 500. There's a lot of special issues. The women wrestlers look to there. I think it's that issue, but it then spotlights the X amount of top female independent workers. And you know, there's a lot of great special issues. The Almanac is my personal favorite because you know, it's just so much history in there. You know, any of us that grew up on the NWA title history, going back to Hack and Schmidt, I'm just on that page right now, page 68. That's in there. Pay-per-view.
Mike, you saw Hack and Schmidt live, didn't you?
No.
No? You've been around a long time.
Lucky, really, to see Thez on those Eddie Einhorn shows. Frank was just, I guess, five at the Roosevelt Stadium. Those three shows, and that first outdoor show where Thez just was coming in to kind of look, like a lot of people in the back, Ricky Starr, The Sheik, Johnny Powers, even Sam Muchnick briefly. They just came to see what Einhorn was doing to buck against the NWA and the Tri-WF. Because a lot of WWF Vince senior talent had been stolen. Victor Rivera and Koloff and Ernie Ladd at the time. And they had to pay a price to go back. Although Koloff quit that night, that first of the three outdoor Roosevelt Stadium shows in Jersey, was Moskris Ladd. And when, Moskris Koloff. And when Koloff didn't get his payday from Einhorn, he quit and soon went back. All of them went back to Vince. But, you know, unique experience, and it was covered fully by London Kappa Publishing at the time. Frank, what have been some highlights for you? Let's go backwards a little. How did you get the job then? So you were already an expert and loved the magazines. Because in our day, Evan remembers this, you'd go and there was like 20, 25 different titles. Ring, and then when Keitzer took over Wrestling Monthly and Wrestling Review, and there was Wrestling World, it was just fantastic. It was kind of mind-blowing. We had so much, which, you know, now the MMA community enjoys a lot more magazines than we do.
Right.
But how did you get the job, or how did you begin working for the magazine?
Well, it's kind of interesting you mentioned the Ring magazine, because in fall of 1996, I had answered an ad for a editor's position for Kappa Publishing. And I knew that they published the Ring magazine. I didn't know at the time that they had taken over the wrestling titles as well from London up in New York. So I submitted some writing samples and had an interview with Stu Sachs and Nigel Collins. And a couple days later, I get a call from Stu. He says, "I want to throw something by you here. You know, we'd like you as a candidate for the editor's position. We're impressed with your writing and so forth, but we have an incredible need in our wrestling department right now." And this is 97 when things were really taking off again for WWE and, you know, the prelude to the Monday Night Wars. And we were doing close to seven titles per month at the time. And that's how hot wrestling was then. And, you know, I thought to myself, well, it was a little bit of a kick in the gut, I mean, I have to admit, because I'm a massive boxing fan, and it seemed like I always had an opinion after a big fight, one way or the other or something, so I thought it would be a good fit for me, and, you know, I was a little bit disappointed, but I figured, you know, this isn't totally foreign to me. I watched it most of my childhood. You know, at that time, it had been 15 years since I really paid close attention to the wrestling business, and I certainly had no perspective as a quote unquote insider, you know, strictly as a fan. So I figured I could probably get the hang of this, and I did. You know, I kind of got my legs under me rather quickly, and you know, the relationship has been solid ever since. I was in the office from 97 to July of 2000, and I left to pursue another opportunity, but I continued as a freelancer for the next 8 years, and then I returned to Kappa 4 years ago, almost to the day, March 12, 2008, I returned as a full-time editor in the office.
Wow.
And so far, it's where we're at now. I mean, there's been a fair amount of attrition in the office. You know, at one point, we had a staff of close to nine people, and now we're down to me and Stu Sachs. So got to keep the fire burning, as they say.
Yeah, we're all in there, and we love it because we support, you know, other than that, it's just WWE's in-house in this country. Do you sell? I want to go to Evan in New York. Do your magazines sell? Are they on newsstands like in Europe, or are they limited?
Okay.
I don't even know. I should know.
I know we're sold in England, throughout Europe. I believe Australia, Canada, naturally. We don't have a Spanish edition or a Hispanic edition, but you know, we pretty much have a global presence, and you know, which is probably the main reason we pay attention or try to at least cover so many different aspects of the game. You know, federations that either whether they're independent or international or whatever, we try to put out as complete a picture of the business as we can. Pardon me.
Let me throw to Evan, and I'll bring you back. I want to talk some boxing and the passing of Doug Furness, who you knew, and maybe have some stories on Doug, too. Only 52, that just seems criminal. He was taken so young from us. Ev?
I think the ultimate irony is that in 2012, pro wrestling I enjoy reading about more than watching, because I watch world wrestling quote-unquote entertainment. I'm aggravated, I'm frustrated, I'm depressed watching what they've turned the once great king of sports into, and TNA to me is like total nonstop agony, because it's brutal. It's just it's just 2 hours of bad comedy, lowbrow humor, you know, they're hyping matches you could care less about, and what's your take on that? I enjoy reading the books, the magazines, the few remaining sheets more than I do watching wrestling.
Well, is that addressed to me, Evan?
Yes, yes.
Okay, my opinion is not too dissimilar from yours. My personal taste is I tend to enjoy wrestling when it's presented as more of an athletic competition. You know, guys like Davey Richards, Kurt Angle, Chris Benoit, and Dynamite Kid have been the type of wrestler I enjoy watching the most.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it's the talking, the skits, that type of stuff. You know, I understand that in an effort to appeal to as many people as possible, in today's world, not many people are going to hang in there for a 10-minute exchange of grappling maneuvers. You know, there's got to be more to it. But I also think that there's a fine line. And I'm speaking mostly about WWE here. As far as TNA goes, you know, we try to be fair in our coverage in the magazines and try not to run particular groups or people or individuals, you know, criticize them too heavily. But my assessment is that it seems like they can't get out of their own way.
Exactly.
They have such a collection of great talent there that why they can't, you know, go beyond the 1.3, 1.2 weekly ratings is baffling to me.
It could be because the show sucks. It could be as simple as that.
Yes.
Yeah. I could book that show in about 30 seconds. You have Kurt Angle wrestle somebody great. You have two X Division guys like Austin Aries and whomever else have a long, great match. You have four or five great matches and two or three short interviews. There's your show. They have an incredible talent base. I'm not knocking the talent. It's what you do with the talent. WWE, the same thing. They are tremendous, tremendous wrestlers in WWE. But you have Bryan Danielson wrestling CM Punk, and you know, Teddy Long runs in the ring, and Johnny Ace or whatever his name is now runs in the ring, and Mike Leno runs in the ring, and you know, it's like everybody's running in the ring. Who cares? It's a circus. It's a circus.
I didn't mean to
you
infer
know?
that TNA is the only company guilty of getting in its own way. I mean, there's certainly examples, which like the one you just mentioned, where it's, you know, let the match stand on its own two legs.
Absolutely.
You don't need the run in. You don't need the whatever, lights going out and Kane showing up, choke slams everybody. Yeah. But,
and I just want to say, I totally agree with you. The names you mentioned, I saw Eddie Edwards and Davey Richards for Ring of Honor in Manhattan. It was one of the greatest matches I've ever seen live, and I'm totally jaded. I mean, this was like 35, 40 minutes. It was a wrestling clinic. And when Davey Richards won the belt, the emotion felt real. He was talking about his late grandparents raising him, and, you know, now he was a champion, and he was emotional, and the crowd felt it. And you said, wow, this feels like a sporting event, not a circus.
Right, right. Now, I agree with you. That those are the types of moments and the types of storylines and the type of presentation that I personally find most entertaining. And, you know, I don't need to watch Eve, as lovely as she is, making out with Zack Ryder to be entertained. I often think, Mike mentioned Lou Fez earlier, and I often think, like, you know, what would Lou Fez be thinking right now if he was watching this?
He put a gun to his head.
Yeah. It's evolved so far from you know, what he became so respected for. And I remember I met Lou back in, I guess it would be 99, 98, and he was older at the time, and he came to our offices, and I walked in, and I shook his hand, and, you know, I'm not a very big guy, but at the time I was about 250 pounds, and first thing he did was got me in a hammer lock, brought me down to one knee. I'm thinking to myself, 32 years old, prime of my life, big as a house, and I got an 82-year-old man I can't do nothing with.
Wow.
He's got my arm twisted.
Now that's a moment to cherish, though.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I once had dinner with Lou Thesz, Killer Kowalski, and Al Costello from the Kangaroos at in Vegas. And I'm sitting there like, this is like wrestling heaven. This is like the Wrestling Hall of Fame right here, you know? It was great. It was great. Dr. Mike, I know you have a few more questions, and we have another guest coming up soon.
I'm not pushing anything, but I do urge everybody, go out and get the Wrestling Almanac, because Davey Richards and CM Punk are right on the cover. Right now, along with Beth Phoenix, who is one of two legit female wrestlers WWE has in the company. And they always covered Chikara and Dragon Gate, Ring of Honor, the Indies, of course, the top wrestler, top 500 issue, which is, Frank, that's got to be your most popular issue, I'm guessing, or consistently?
Absolutely. Far and away. And I think the reason for that is that it is something that not only our readers look forward to, but promoters, and except for maybe the top 10, who don't really care, you know, the wrestlers as well. I mean,
well, they go nuts. They go nuts in the locker room at APW or Pro Wrestling Guerrilla down in L.A. They have that issue. They're all passing it around. So they go out and buy it in droves. I think the wrestlers enjoy that issue more than the fans do, and it's great for the fans, depending on whatever region you are, because the wrestlers are picked from all points of the globe, Japanese wrestlers, Mexican wrestlers, and all the great indies out there. And that's kind of, you know, what Pro Wrestling Illustrated, the Wrestler Inside Wrestling, it supports all types of wrestling. And it's just fun. So before we let you go, maybe you mentioned one great moment. What are two or three other great memories or things you'll take to your grave with you? You had Lou Thesz put you in a hammer lock, which is a big thing.
Yeah. Well, I remember as we were speaking the other day about Doug Furness, who passed away recently. I remember he was actually the first professional wrestler that I met in my position as an editor with the magazines. He was at an ECW show at the time, and I'd spent about an hour and a half in 15 degree weather trying to chase down Joey Styles so I can get in the building, and when I finally did, there's Doug Furness there, who I recall vaguely from the 90s, you know, his run in WWF with Phil LaFon, and this guy's sporting the biggest thighs I've ever seen on a human being, and I introduced myself, and, you know, he's a very soft-spoken guy, not a lot of words, but he was kind of ragging on me a little bit about the magazine and coverage, and you know, this is my first, you know, I was a cub reporter. This is my first assignment out there. I'm at this ECW arena. which, by the way, 3 weeks before I was at a wedding reception at. But so yeah, he seemed like a very nice, down to earth guy, and you know, I had heard like various things about his health, but I didn't know he was suffering from Parkinson's. Nor did I know that he was, you know, as ill as he was, and it was really kind of a shock. I mean, there, you know, let's face it, there's no shortage of bad news when it comes to the wrestlers passing away before their time. But some names, you know, sometimes you're not, you might be shocked, but you're not really surprised, you know?
We weren't, yeah, we definitely weren't ready nor expecting him. That was really horrendous.
Yeah, I mean, you know, not to be insensitive, but if you were to construct a, you know, a wrestling Deadpool or something like that, his name wouldn't be on the list. You know, he's not somebody you would expect. And really kind of shocking. And I think the really, really salient point to me is that people, he may be one of wrestling's all-time most underrated performers. Because, you know, I don't know how much you know about him, but this guy, you talk about a guy who had world-class physical strength and could fly with anybody in the ring.
No, I shot him in All Japan a couple of times, a few tours in 1990, and he did Jim Brunzell drop kicks.
Right.
Just incredible. So he was the antithesis of a big power muscular guy because he could mat and chain and then do all that little nuanced stuff. Great drop kicks, hurricanranas like Scott Steiner used to do 20 years ago. He was amazing athlete. Before we let you go, and of course, Frank Crude at Pro Wrestling Illustrated, Pro Wrestling Illustrated's 2012 Wrestling Almanac, The Wrestler, Inside Wrestling. You can find him on every newsstand out here on the West Coast. They're in all our supermarkets and Walgreens drugstores with the other magazines. But Mayweather or Pacquiao, before I let you go, if they finally signed a match this year, who would you pick, Mayweather or Pacquiao, right now?
Mayweather Pacquiao.
Yeah, we're switching gears. So who would win if they had a match a boxing match this year?
Oh, Pacquiao.
All right.
I disagree. I disagree. I thought Pacquiao lost to Marquez. I think his skills looked eroded, and I think Mayweather would win.
He's stuck in Pacquiao though. There's something there he's afraid of.
Did you guys see Salido and Lopez the other night on Showtime? That was tremendous.
Oh man, what a war that was!
Yeah, that was great.
And,
anyway,
Well, Frank, we'll have to have you back on and talk more boxing if you'll come back on in a couple months. We'll have you back.
Happy to, Mike, anytime.
All right, the great Frank Cruda, Pro Wrestling Illustrated, The Wrestler, Inside Wrestling. They've been around since our childhood. Get out there and support them. With that, we're going to take a short time out. Come right back here on Legends Radio.
All right, Evan Ginsberg back with Legends Radio, and we were just talking wrestling, and we're going to continue with Bryce Remsburg representing Chikara. And I just saw my very first Chikara match on Long Island a few weeks back, and I was very impressed.
Well, thank you for the kind words. I'm glad you had a good time, Evan. That's very high praise coming from you.
Oh, thank you. And if you've heard the show, you know I generally hate what poses as wrestling in 2012. But I was watching you guys, and there was tremendous wrestling. There was, you know, just I thought it was really uniquely entertaining and sharp and funny. And I'm looking around the audience, and I'm seeing like all these Williamsburg hipster types, and I'm going, this isn't your traditional wrestling audience. Tell us a little about that. I found that very interesting.
Definitely. I think, you know, as a child and whatever upbringing we came up, wrestling was fun, be it as a fan or what now makes up the Chikara locker room, and that's really what we're going for. I mean, there's you can count each other in the head until you're unconscious, or like you can come out and have a good time, and that's really what Chikara is all about. You know, as a kid, I remember the Ultimate Warrior shaking the ropes and all these great larger than life colorful images, and that's really what Chikara aspires to be. It's a comic book that's come to life. There's laughter, there's action, there's drama, there's something for everyone. And yeah, so I've brought a lot of my Philadelphia hipster friends that, you know, have never been to a professional wrestling show, to our shows in Philadelphia or New York or wherever, and they've, by and large, unless they're really convincing liars, had a really great time. It's a night of entertainment. It's live, cheap entertainment. You know, a lot of the venues we play sell beer. That's your thing. Sell pizza. Come out and have a good time. And, yeah, we had a couple shows in Brooklyn, which is not far off from Williamsburg, I don't think. And, now we play in Manhattan in New York, and, yeah, it's great. If you go out and you see the comic book nerd demographic represented, you see, you know, fathers with their children represented, you see the hipsters, you see whoever, and it's a great time. It's rewarding to bring all those, you know, walks of life together, because there's jocks in the locker room, there's nerds in the locker room, there's hipsters in the locker room, and it's a great cross section. It's something for everyone, I believe.
And I totally agree, because I went with a casual fan who brought his nephew and a ton of his little kid friends, and the casual fan loved it, the little kids loved it, and jaded old school Evan loved it, and
yeah.
It was like, this is perfect. It's a
home run.
It's a home run, and it was very reasonably priced. We're sitting there going, compared to a baseball game or a Knick game or whatever the case may be, you know, this is a great value. It's basically the cost of going to a movie for 3 hours or 3 hours plus of live entertainment. I sound like I'm doing a commercial here. But
I'm not going to stop you. I will not stop you, sir.
Yeah. But I was legitimate. I was legitimately entertained, and not only were the characters colorful like Soldier Ant, they could work, which is even better. Yeah.
Yeah. No. Definitely. A trick that we're stealing. We're really trying to focus on 2012, which is our 11th season. Is a full scale entertainment 360. The minute you walk out of your car, we have a game show while you're waiting in line to come in. This is a trick we borrowed from the Harlem Globetrotters. It's wall to wall entertainment. The entire time you're there, there's something going on to captivate your senses. There's, you know, a guy comes out before the show and introduces the announcer, and then you know, we're taking pictures intermission. The guys are out at the merchandise table intermission. They're out there on your way out the door, just wall to wall entertainment. Never at once are you, is there a lull, is there a moment where you're not, there's not something to grab you. That's sort of the Chikara Live experience. And we have a lot of very fortunate to sell a lot of DVDs through Smart Mark Video. We sold a surprisingly exceptional amount of iPay-per-views last November, but really the live experience is where it's at, and we're really taking on a very ambitious tour schedule in 2012. We're going to be going a lot of places we haven't gone before. We're coming to places we have gone before in larger venues. So yeah, we're all guns a-blazing here in 2012.
And tell the listeners exactly what your role is with the company.
Oh, man. I referee matches, first and foremost, I suppose. I've been with Chikara since day one in 2002. I started out as a ring announcer. I was trained by Mike Quackenbush and Reckless Youth at the Chikara Wrestle Factory in the summer of 2002. And now I commentate matches. I ring announce once in a while. I host a web series called The Event Center, which promotes our upcoming events. I coordinate travel to the shows, this and that. Wherever there is a set of hands behind the scenes, I've worn many, many hats. But to the shows, I believe when you're at the show, you'll see me refereeing, and if you buy a DVD, you'll hear my voice commentating.
And of all the indie promotions, the ones I particularly enjoy are Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, Chikara, and Ring of Honor and Chikara now in the midst of doing some angles together. Tell us a little about that.
I think that there's a lot to be gained. There's a lot of displaced wrestling fans. If you look at Ring of Honor, unfortunately for them, they're a great company, a great promotion run by great people, but they're not seeing the crowds they were seeing 5 years ago. And somewhere those wrestling fans have gone. Some of them have come to Chikara, we believe. And obviously Ring of Honor is a much larger company than Chikara financially, organizationally, everything. Ring of Honor is at least 4 or 5 times larger than Chikara. So I think Ring of Honor is looking to reach out and bring some new eyes onto their television show, their current product. And Chikara, obviously, a starving, fledging, do-it-yourself indie wrestling promotion with no, you know, financial back or anything, just a lot of elbow grease and time by, you know, these guys. I would love to you know, bite some of Ring of Honor's fans. Not bite, but share, I think.
Yeah.
So this is all really culminating for now in Chicago on April 28th in a thing called Synergy. Chicago's going to have an afternoon show. Ring of Honor's going to have an evening show. I'm quite confident you're going to see some crossover, some Ring of Honor guys in the Chikara show, some Chikara guys in the Ring of Honor show. And I don't think it's just confined to Chicago. There's some stuff going on in Philly, some stuff going on in New York. I understand some stuff's going to be happening in Baltimore in a couple weeks with the Ring of Honor TV taping. So, yeah, it's just something for everyone. I think a co-promotion, when done right, is a beautiful thing. Ring of Honor fans becoming Chikara fans becoming Ring of Honor fans, holding hands and hugging and running off into the sunset.
There you go. And one thing that I was really impressed with was there was almost like a vaudeville-type feel where you laughed with the action, not at it. You're not being dismissive. You're going, that's legitimately funny. That's legitimately sharp. That's witty. You know, I'm sitting there. I was very impressed. But anyway, I know Dr. Mike is itching to get some questions in. Dr. Mike Lano.
Well, there are a lot of parallelisms. Reckless Youth I've known since he started, and Mike Quackenbush and I both column for Pro Wrestling Illustrated, and I just had our editor, Frank Crude, on. But I brought the two comedians on tonight. I'm looking at your Twitter site, and Brian Posehn I've known and had on before, and Ali Wong is from my neck of the woods, and she's on that Chelsea Lately NBC show. But you are a stand-up or a sketch comedian as well, besides being a rough. Tell us a little of the sketch stuff, and I feel so horrible. I mean, I've shot everything and everybody since 1966 for the magazines, from Thez to Carl Gotch. Even the last few years, got my fill of Ring of Honor and Dragon Gate. I just hope when you guys coming out to new places, I finally get to see Chikara. I'm out here, obviously, on the West Coast. I've never seen you guys. I know of you. I'm itching because you guys are the big three, you know, in terms of international indies. But tell us about your sketch comedy, for starters.
Well, first of all, we would love to come to the West Coast. It's quite a haul. Unfortunately, we travel in bands of 30 or 40 people. It's hard to get everyone out that far, but someday, hopefully. But yes, I'm a big Brian Posehn fan, actually. I've come to see his stand-up shows many times. I met him. There was a festival in Austin, Texas last year where there was wrestling and comedy, and I had a chance to talk with him for a little bit. He was super cool. So I just thought it was a weird turn of events that he was on this interviewed in the same night as me. But my college buddies and I started a sketch comedy group 8 years ago, and I think we started off trying to make it big in the sketch comedy world, and in a more realistic, now we're in our late 20s, not our early 20s, and just kind of doing it for fun. It's a hobby. It's something we enjoy. We have about 60 videos at our website, secretpants.net. Our group's called Secret Pants. We've had some stuff on Funny or Die, had some stuff on College Humor, done a bunch of shows in Philly and New York, but it's more of a hobby now, but it's a good thing. And the sketch training, I think, crosses over a lot, and to stuff I've learned from wrestling, I've been able to apply in sketch comedy and vice versa.
Yeah, from the little I've seen on DVD of Chikara, and tell our listeners, when I first heard about it, I was thinking, okay, this is well before Dragon Gate, Gabe ever did anything with them in this country. But Chikara, I thought, oh, somebody is going to be creating a group sort of based with Japanese sensibilities or nuances. Is that, but then of course it seems to be more anime. Is the Chikara part, what does Chikara mean? Is it a Japanese word, I'm guessing, or a character?
The Japanese symbol, pronounced Chikara, represents strength and power. You see, actually, Rey Mysterio has the Chikara symbol tattooed on his body just by chance. You kind of see it around, but yes, there's an absolutely definite Japanese influence. I don't think in 2002 or 2001, even when Reckless and Quack were talking about forming Chikara, there was a lot of, the British style being wrestled on the U.S. Indies or the Japanese influence. And I just think the idea is it's a melting pot. Evan was talking about the vaudevillian, the comedic aspects, the athleticism, the comic book anime aspect is definitely there. There's a heavy, heavy comic book emphasis on our DVD covers. Some awesome comic book designers have done that. Our next pay-per-view in Philadelphia is in cooperation with the Wizard World Comic Convention. It's really just something for everyone. It's a mishmash. It's a melting pot of the guys in the locker room, the fans in the audience. It's trying to really, not pigeonhole ourselves because we can't afford to. Any fan, any eyes that come to us, we like to think that there's something for everyone. And I've totally got off the train of thought, but yes.
It's supported by Five Star Wrestling, though. So if you love Ring of Honor or Dragon Gate or, obviously Japan or Mexican wrestling, you're going to love Chikara because, you know, the wrestling is the fundamental thing, and all of the other stuff is done brilliantly and done well, and that just adds to the package.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the kind words. Again, from you as well, very, very high praise coming from a high place. Much appreciated.
Please tell Mike Quackenbush to get a hold of me. And I was telling Evan, we really want to have Mike on the show. He's, again, the guy's so multi-talented, a trainer, a promoter, of course, a wrestler. And he works with me at the Pro Wrestling Illustrated magazines. He used to, I don't know how often his column is anymore, but just a lot of props to you guys and hope to see you guys soon, you know, maybe for a convention that'll drag you guys out here. I can't wait. That's the last thing on my bucket list. I've shot everything else, All Japan Women, a zillion times over in Japan. I've not been able to shoot the Chikara or cover them yet.
Hey, if you put the bug in the right people's ear, we'd love to come out that way sometime soon. That would be awesome. Yes, I will tell Mike you said hello. He's a busy guy, but I managed to talk to him quite a bit somehow.
All right, Ev, I'll throw back to you.
There you go, Bryce. Please plug the website. Plug anything you need to plug.
Oh, man. Most places in the eastern United States, I think we're going to be headed this year. We're heading up to Toronto and Ottawa, Canada next weekend, March 24, 25. And we'll be in New York City, your neck of the woods. May 20th, we'll be celebrating our 10th anniversary. Our next iPay-per-view emanates from Philadelphia on June 2nd. It's called Chikarasaurus Rex. You can buy it at GoFightLive.tv, the same carrier as the Ring of Honor iPay-per-views. We'll be in Chicago in April. All kinds of cool stuff that I don't think the public knows about yet, but coming a lot of cool places, a lot of cool things on the way for the rest of 2012. ChikaraPro.com, new internet video releases every weekday. Really try to constant contact with the fans. Chikara101.com is a message board, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Twitter, Facebook, Cowabunga. And I'd like to plug Wawa milkshakes because they're delicious.
There you go. There you go.
And if another treasure you don't get in California, Dr. Mike.
Yeah, we don't. That's terrible. Wow, milkshakes?
Oh, man. Second to none.
And if you're ever in New York, I book a club, and we regularly have stand-up, so come on down and do some stuff, you know?
That sounds great, yeah. Look,
I book Gizzy's down in the Village, yeah.
Oh, that'd be awesome. We were just talking to Cabana about $5 wrestling maybe making its way to New York someday.
Oh, yeah.
I got to
tell
you, I saw that. He hosted it. I sat right behind him in L.A. at the Wrestle Reunion. $5 wrestling. And Tammy Sitch was one of the celebs brought up to comment. We're watching the videos. This is at 1 in the morning. It has to be the funniest, most creative sort of non-wrestling thing I have ever seen. It
Absolutely.
Is hilarious, funny. They take the crappiest matches around the country, indie garbage. And the guys are trying, but they just – it is funny. It has to be seen to be believed.
Yeah, I was at the one in Atlanta last year for WrestleMania. It was a great time. It's legitimately $5 to get in, $5 at that. And one in Atlanta was all you could drink beer for $5, just everyone hanging out having a good time. And it was a blast. Definitely working on getting that to Philly and New York ASAP.
Yeah, that would be great. That would be great. Yeah. Anyway, Bryce, thank you so much for appearing on Legends Radio. And please tell Mike and tell any of the other guys if they want to come on and promote the New York show, we'd be happy to have them.
Most definitely. That'd be great. Thank you so much for having me.
You got it. And we will be right back with our very next guest right after these commercial announcements. All right, Evan Ginsberg back with Legends Radio. And our next guest is a colorful, impressionist radio host, internet celebrity. He is Johnny Video. How are you tonight, Johnny?
Oh, I'm sorry. I had a roast in the oven. I didn't hear the question.
There you go.
I'm good. I was gonna do what I did last time. I was gonna give you the finally, but after Monday Night Rock's performance was so terrible on there, I just don't think it's cool to impersonate The Rock anymore.
You know, I was watching bits and pieces of WWE last week, and it felt like a talk show. Every time I turned the channel and put it back on, I regretted it because somebody was talking. There was no wrestling.
Yep. Yeah, as I was watching it too, I was wondering if you were doing your typical 18-minute DVR run through on it. I'm like, God, he sure didn't miss much if he did. You know,
except making
fun of The Rock.
And what I do at this point is I turn it off at 10 p.m. and watch Unsung. You know Unsung?
No, I'm not familiar with that one.
Unsung is a hourly 1 hour documentary every week on R&B musicians that were utterly ripped off and destroyed by the music industry. Last week was David Ruffin. You watch the thing, you want to hang yourself by the time it's over. You know, it's like anyway. So I look forward to turning off Raw every week at 10. So, anyway, this is painful is the word, and this is about you and not WWE. So tell us about your various projects. I know you have a radio show, and you have a very popular website with beautiful women. Tell us about everything.
Well, I am the fifth wheel on Smart Mark Radio, which, you know, you're friends with all those guys, so you know about that. So
sure.
Lately I've been doing a little bit more of the stuff that, I did for you on the, in terms of the comedy and stuff, just calling up and being various celebrities. We did President Obama last week, and we did a little bit of Regis Philbin before that. But just basically calling in and being silly, and then you know when they need me or when it's an exceptionally big show or something like that, or if I land them a guest, you know, then I'll be on the show too. But you know, basically I'm the fifth Beatle, even though there's only four of us. In terms of the website, it's smartasses.net, which you know, we've grown so much in the past 2 years. We're now officially the fourth largest top 100 sexiest women list in the world now, and it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And that's kind of what this is all about, is the media tour for that. It comes out every St. Patrick's Day, so that's this Saturday. So yeah, we're pretty excited about it. As far as I go, I'm officially what you call an internet celebrity, an F-lister now. I recently got on IMDb for a small voiceover I did in a movie last year. So yeah, good year.
There you go. And I find as I get older, as far as women, it's almost like you'll see a picture of a Playboy Playmate or whomever, and then you see an interview with the same woman, and the second she starts talking, you go, oh man, I wish she didn't start talking, because she sounds like an idiot bimbo half the time, you know? And it's almost like intelligence is sexy. When a woman is beautiful and intelligent at the same time, you know, even if she's not as beautiful as the younger, hotter, you know, Playboy or Penthouse model, it just means more to me. Or is this just old age kicking in?
No, I'm old now too. So I think intelligence is a huge part of it. You know, I mean, more so than in the past years, you know, the more we grow, the more we really take a lot of fan input into it. I mean, when we were starting out back in 06 and 07, it was just what we liked, and that was it. But somewhere around 2010, we started bleeding in with the fans once, and 2011, it got to be about where that was about 30% of it. And this year, really, it was about I would say 70% of it was fan vote. But to address what you're talking about, you know, obviously we do a lot of research on our end, and you know, if somebody comes off the way that you're talking about, I mean, you know, they drop right down in the ranks in terms of who we want on there. You know, intelligence is sexy. I'm sorry, and you know, I rant and rave. You know, I write a lot of articles on smartasses.net, and my latest one, I went into a rant. We did an article on Alexis Nyers. I did an interview with her from Pretty Wild. And the thing I ranted about in the article was, you know, all the comments, the negative comments that were going out towards her. And whether you believe in the comments or not, it wasn't so much of whether they were positive or negative. It was how they were presented. You know, we live in this world where everybody speaks in like this text language, you know, instead of A-R-E, it's just the letter R. And, you know, there's cursing and, you know, some people think, oh, well, my curse is going to get bleeped, so I'll put an asterisk in there, and then 10,000 exclamation points and misspellings. And it's like in the current day and age, something happened in the last 5 years where intellect being a prerequisite went straight out the window. So you touched on something that's a pet peeve of mine. So, you know, if we want to cross a celebrity like that, you know, if they're going to make our list and they're out there talking like an idiot like that, we're not going to edify that.
I want you to know I have almost the same reaction when I watch MMA. You know, you're watching two guys battle and you go, this highly tuned athlete is a black belt in whatever and what a fighting champion. Then they're talking and they go, I'm going to tear his tonsils out and make him eat his liver. And you go, it's like, this isn't as interesting as I thought it was.
Right.
Anyway, I know Dr. Mike Leno has some questions for Johnny Video. Dr. Mike.
Well, I guess I'd have to ask, I don't know, if we're talking pop culture and stuff moronic, is Lindsay Lohan getting involved in another drive-by or a hit-and-run? Why would you do that with all of the paparazzi all over you? Whether you're a wrestler, an MMA, a comedian, the paparazzi, they could be anybody. They can just be fans with an iPhone. So why would you flee the scene when you know you're just going to go back to the slammer?
God, I don't know. I'm out of the news loop a little bit.
That happened last night, and they have film of her just leaving. She apparently hit the club owner's car and grazed his knee and fled off. You could just hear her peeling. And this came just days after. You know, it's like anybody, wrestler, boxer, MMA star, or entertainer going online and saying something. She was interviewed by Matt Lauer just before hosting Saturday Night Live a week ago, saying she no longer, she eschewed the club scene. She was a homebody. She had been there, done that, wasn't doing clubbing anymore. So here she clubs two nights in a row, but last night gets in all this trouble with a million videos of her taking off. And I don't know what you do. You're her publicist or something.
Wow. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is like she just got done kind of redeeming herself in the eyes of the nations on Saturday Night Live a week ago. You know, timing is everything, huh?
Yeah, or the Kardashians having a war of words, you know, this is just me, my opinion only, not the brightest bulbs in the female drawer, with John Hamm of Mad Men. They're having a war of words there, and it's almost like sports trash-talking promos back and forth. He said they're idiots, and he hates reality television as opposed to good scripted TV, which he does, you know, and Evan was talking about scripted show that he watches, which is taking a back seat because all these other things are cheaper to produce, but they're you know, getting more attention. You know, Snooki getting knocked up, that is apparently more newsworthy than Meryl Streep or Sean Darjean getting the Academy Awards.
Right. Well, the thing, the thing with the Kardashians is it's like everything else in this world. I mean, there's just always going to be backlash. You know, when they first came on, it was, oh, how interesting this is, look how beautiful they are, blah, 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 blah. And then suddenly, you know, it's not cool to like the Kardashians anymore. And then, you know, it's when the backlash starts. I mean, that's just been going on for years. You know, Madonna, Michael Jackson, you know, anybody that makes it big, eventually it's more cool to be alternative and not like that person. So
Madonna, the only thing that can tear her apart basically is her choice of boyfriends and then the fact that her arms are sculpted. She's worked so hard on her arms, she's constantly getting picked on because she has mannish athletic arms, which really seems pretty stupid.
Dr. Mike, what about that faux British accent that she puts on?
She's a Detroit girl with a British accent. Come on.
Yeah, what's that all about? Yeah. Anyway. So Johnny, tell us about some of your projects. I know you always have interesting things going on, and what do you have coming up?
Oh, well, you know, again, this time of year, man, it's just everything. I mean, we're all working 18 hours a day, just getting everything finalized for the top 100. But one thing I was going to mention is because I was listening to parts of the show before you called, and I was really really stoked to hear not one but two comic book conversations, because one of the things we just did was we released our it kind of leading up to our top 100 sexiest women. we released our top 50 sexiest comic book babes of all time. And Dr. Mike, when you asked Brian if he was a DC or a Marvel guy, I was like, I'm sitting here rooting DC, because I'm totally a DC comics guy. But yeah, we just got that posted up last night, and already, I mean, the website's just going ballistic. I think we've had, 12,000 hits today, something like that. It's just crazy.
Here's something that'll make you die. In 1966 or 67, I was a huge comic book collector of DC Comics. I had the fifth issue of Superman, and my stepfather, who was a real a-hole, proceeded to throw them all away. I was getting punished for something. And if I had that thing now, how many thousands and thousands of dollars would that issue be worth? A lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was in pristine condition at the time.
Oh my God! Al, I don't think I ever had anything that big, but I know every Christmas my grandmother used to get me 100 comic books every Christmas. So, yeah, I think about that 4 or 5 years in a row. There had to be at least one or two that were valuable in that huge stack of 500. You know. And I don't have
money. Yeah, you could say that about everything. Baseball cards when we were kids. And, you know, you can't regret things from 40 years ago. Kids aren't thinking these are prized collectibles. They're thinking this is a comic. This is a baseball card. We used to put the baseball cards in the spokes of the bicycles. Remember that?
Yeah. I used to do where, like, I don't know, let's just say I had Pete Rose or whatever, and if he, when he got traded from the Reds to the Phillies, I would get out a pen just to stay organized, and I would write on the front of the card, you know, traded.
Yes. That's funny.
Yeah.
But you want to know the irony of it all, if you really think about it. You know, even if you had a comic that was worth $5,000, you know, today that's a month worth of bills, you know, if you live in a place like New York. You know, it's not a life changer unless it's something like, you know, you had a Ty Cobb baseball card and it's worth $200,000 or something. You know, I mean, for the most part, it wouldn't be a life changer. That's the sad thing if you really think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, $5,000 in New York will get you a Tanqueray and tonic and your heat bill, you know.
I'm reading in the paper the other day, Jay-Z and Beyonce are at this club, and somebody sends over a $30,000 bottle of alcohol, okay? $30,000, you know, one bottle. You know, there are people that don't make $30,000 in a year, and it's almost like, you know, these are supposed to be the edgy rappers and such. You know, this is the 1% now, you know? I mean, when she had a baby, they basically bought an entire floor. Did you see this story?
No, I know they spoofed it on Saturday Night Live a little bit, but no, I didn't.
Yeah, I mean, they basically took over an entire floor, and they gave like $1 million to the hospital, allegedly. So, you know, it's now these people with quote-unquote street cred, this is the 1% now. You know, I'm not drinking $30,000 bottles. Generally, I'm not even drinking $30 bottles. You know, it's like, give me a cheap beer. You know, it's like, anyway.
Right.
Anyway, that's...
Yeah.
It's my rant.
Yellow-tailed $8.99 is about all I'll grab.
That's Budweiser.
It's my rant. But we're rapidly running out of time. Tell us some recent highlights from Smart Mark Radio, some of the great guests you guys have had, or anybody interesting coming up, and anything else you want to plug.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was talking about Alexis Nyers. She's actually our guest this Sunday. So we're really excited about that. And then, you know, it's in for the plug. It's smartmarkradio.com. You can just go and listen there if you want. But, we had, Brooke Tessmacher on earlier this year. The guy you had on a couple weeks ago, Vinny Guido, was on there. They've been getting some pretty good guests lately. It's been a lot of fun. We interviewed, Chris Williams from Ghost Hunters International last November. So, you know, they're, it's growing and growing and growing. It's not quite where you guys are at yet, but, you know, it's chugging along nice, you know.
That's great. And it's nice, it's almost like a sister show or a brother show. It's nice to have two shows supporting each other instead of, you know, like these idiot wrestling promoters who kill each other. it's nice, like, we like your show, you like our show, we promote each other, you know, it's cool. And, for those of you who didn't hear it, Johnny Video did a 20 or 30 minute spoof of this show, which was dead on. I mean, dead on. Do you remember what week that was? Because we'd love the listeners to go into the archives and check that out, because it was funny.
Oh, gosh, no, I don't. I couldn't even tell you a month at this point. My months run together so badly, and, like, you know, I know it's cliche to say that, but honest to God, like, in my soul or brain or whatever, I feel like it's the middle of January right now. Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that it's March, and it's just because just every day just passes by so quickly. So if I were to guess, I might be 6 months off, honest to God. But if I find it, I'll post it on your Facebook.
Yeah,
so.
absolutely. And you must listen to it, fans, because it is funny. Dr. Mike and I, and our engineer Rick Hendrickson, we were listening to this, you know, off air, and we were just laughing through the whole thing because he really captured it. So we're going to ask Johnny Video down the road to do a 10-minute spoof of Dr. Mike preparing his roast every week on the radio show, and, like, disappearing mid-show. I think that would be hilarious. What do you think, Mike?
I listen to that.
You guys forget. I have MS, and my back gets sore. I got to get up and do something. And I'm married, so it's 3 hours earlier. It's sort of like the John Lennon house husband thing. I got to get up, move around, and turn the oven on.
There you go.
Without sticking my head in it.
That's what Howard Stern does mid-show. He goes, he turns the oven on, he gets the roast just right. It's anyway, Johnny, thank you so much for appearing on Legends Radio. We really do appreciate it, and you know, we'll keep supporting each other. Thank you so much.
All right, man. Thanks for having me. Good luck. Bye-bye.
You got it. And we will be right back with our final guest and Roger Ortega right after these commercial announcements. All right, Evan Ginsberg, back with our final guest. You heard a great set of his music early in the show. We heard four cuts that are just indicative of such a talented, creative, future superstar. We have Roger Ortega. How are you tonight, Roger?
I'm good, man. I'm good. You know, I'm wondering if anybody could hear that. I kind of have it on the back. Up in the back here, and it sounded like I just heard some music. I don't know if anybody heard your introduction, your lovely introduction there.
Oh, okay. Well, we are archived 24/7, so they'll have every opportunity for eternity to hear it. So don't worry.
I love it. Well, I appreciate all your kind words, man. I really do. And you know, I've had the honor of meeting you a few times, and every time, man, you've been a great support, and I appreciate you having me on again, man.
You got it. And Roger Live is a dynamic performer. I said this earlier in the show, and that always impresses me, because we down at Gizzy's, we get such a variety of talent, every possible musical genre, but many times young performers, they kind of just stand there like a deer in the headlights, you know.
Right.
They just strum a guitar, or they sit in a chair, and sometimes they don't even make eye contact with an audience. And Roger, yeah, the second he walks in, the crowd is in the palm of his hand, and that's impressive. You know, it really is, because a lot of people have not mastered that.
It's you know, I it's something that I've kind of grown into, you know, as a performer. You know, it really stems back to watching, you know, people pop acts like the New Kids on the Block and things like that, you know, that people that really interacted with the crowds and could put the crowds in the palm of their hands like that. And, you know, kind of growing up with all of that, and not to mention growing up in a musical family, I could not be up on the stage, you know, trying to command it. And, that's something that I really work for. Especially, you know, so I think I'm a good singer. I don't feel like I'm the greatest singer, you know, but what I bring to the table is a lot of charisma, some really good songwriting, the ability to sing, of course, But definitely the overall performance and getting the crowd involved and engaged in my show. And that's, I think that's what I love more than anything, you know, is being up on stage. So,
and another
gotta make
thing,
it a good time.
Another thing that you do that very few other indie performers do is wholeheartedly promote every gig, promote every CD release, promote everything. I mean, even this radio appearance, you were promoting it, and I'm like, this guy's on the money, because it's almost like if a tree falls in the forest and nobody hears it, you know, did it really fall? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's the thing, man. I think the first go around when I had my group together, Slow Motion, back in the day. You know, we would try to promote, but we didn't have the tools like, you know, Facebook and Twitter and the ability to kind of reach people on a level that I'm now reaching people. You know, I can seriously say at this point I've got fans all over the world, and that's crazy to say. You know, it made me sparse, but you know, I've got people in Germany, Brazil, Canada. So it's kind of cool that I'm reaching these people that I probably never would have reached before. And a lot of it is, it's still a lot of word of mouth. You know, I've got a lot of fans, I call them Roros, on Twitter. And these girls, my wife said a couple weeks ago, something happened. I can't remember what I said or whatever it was. And these girls just started retweeting and just promoting for me. And Heather, my wife, was just like, and she goes, these girls are a force. Like they're so driven, and they are. They're very driven, and they're very passionate about who they follow and you know, who they support. And I'm blessed to be one of those artists that they love and that they want to see do well. And I think that I try to get them, I think, to see a lot of themselves in me, and vice versa. So when they see me succeed, they're all succeeding with me. You know, this is, and so promotion, you know, is key, and Twitter's been really big for that. And I think a lot of young artists, they miss the boat on this. They don't realize what a tool that these social networks, social media can play. Or what you know, the tool is, how to use it rather. They'll say, oh yeah, I have a Twitter account, but you'll have, you know, 1,000 followers or 10,000 followers, but if you're not engaging and interacting with these people, they're not really going to care about you. You're just a number to them. You know, you're just somebody else that they follow. So I think you really have to put in the work and interact with these people. I love them to death. I love each and every one of them because they're all like friends to me, and it's just amazing how supportive they are. And it is work. I mean, last night I decided, you know, I had had a long day in the studio, and I was in two studios yesterday, trying to wrap up the album. And I thought, you know, I haven't interacted with my Roros for really a couple days. So I thought I'm going to take 2 or 3 minutes, and I'm going to jump on, and I'm going to say hello and say hi to a couple people and get out. An hour later, I'm like, guys, yeah, I really have to go, because it's amazing how lost you get in it, but it is work and it's time consuming, and I consider it part of my job to interact with everyone, a part of my job that I absolutely love, though. You know, they're amazing people. And I just want to say one thing, you know, speaking of amazing people, we actually lost, you know, a friend of ours, you know, in our Roro community, and also our BH community, which is Blockheads, which are New Kids on the Block fans. She was a young lady that, you know, her life ended, tragically a couple days ago. And, you know, I wanted to play that song for her earlier, Angel by Your Side, you know, in honor of her and her memory. And, she was something special to all of us. I never got the chance to meet her, but she tweeted me every day, and it was like, you know, a friendship that we had. So it, you get to know these people, and they're like your friends, and they can kind of feel like family at times, you know. So it can be work, and it is work, but it's enjoyable. It's enjoyable. So,
and speaking of that, one thing that you do that many young performers don't even grasp is at your shows, when the show is over, you're shaking hands, you're looking people in the eye, you're thanking them for coming, you're working the room almost like a master politician, but it's sincere, And yeah. A lot of performers, I watch this, it's mind-boggling. There could be the greatest act, you know, following them or preceding them. There's no interest whatsoever. There's no networking going on. They're lucky if they have a business card. Half the time they don't.
Right.
And you're there, you know, to promote yourself and meet your fans and make new contacts. And it's a skill. It's an art. And I don't understand why. It's almost like the set is over, and the typical musician—they're out the door with their little group 5 minutes later because they want to be told how wonderful they are, and that accomplishes nothing. That's preaching to the converted.
Exactly. Yeah, you've got to kind of get out there, and they don't understand. You know, a lot of the younger acts don't understand that. You know, you've got to get out there, and what really makes a fan, the music is what hooks them. You know, typically the music will hook them, but to keep them as a fan and make them a fan, you've got to interact with them. You've got to make them feel special. You know, you've got to make them feel like they're the only person on the planet, even if it's for 2 seconds. You know, you've got to have that. And, you definitely have to network. I mean, I get through a series of events, you know, I met you and here I am, you know, and it's just one of those things that you got to do. It's part of the job. The show isn't over necessarily when the show's over. You know, the show's over for me when I say goodnight to my fans and, you know, when I sign off, you know, for the night. Because when I come home, I'll talk to them about the show and, you know, tell them how great it was or how crappy it was or whatever it was about the show. And then I sign off and I go to sleep. But, it's constant pushing yourself and promoting and trying to get to the next level, regardless of what that level is. You know, I don't think I'm ever really satisfied, with where I'm going or where I'm at. I'm here. I want to be in the next level. If I get there, I want to be the next level. And it's crazy. I was thinking about this the other day that I've really only begun this journey again in June. So in the last 10 months, so many wonderful things have happened for me. And I've always believed that, you know, God helps those who help themselves, man. And Lord knows I am helping myself like crazy to get things done. So I definitely, you know, whether it's divine intervention or I'm writing something that the universe is pushing me on, whatever it is, man, things are going great. And, I just got to keep going, keep the momentum going and keep moving, man. Just keep moving. I don't stop. I really don't. if there's something in my way, I either, you know, find a way around it or bust right through it. I just don't stop. So
yeah, that's what you have to do. And this is a human interest question. I hope I don't get you in trouble, but whenever I see your show, I notice in the crowd it's like a sea of beautiful young women. Okay, so your wife must be a very secure person to be able to handle adulation that you're getting from such a crowd. What do you have to say about that?
Well, let me say this about it. It's so funny. One, she pretty much sees all the tweets. She's on Twitter and she understands that, you know, a lot of it's play, you know, there's a lot of flirting that goes on and she's right there with me, you know. And she don't, honestly, I'm the type, she doesn't even care. But the, one thing that happened tonight, I'm Catholic. I gave up a bunch of things for Lent. Pizza being one of them. And oddly enough, I really like frozen pizzas. Uh-huh. But we've had these frozen pizzas in our house since, I don't know, for weeks because I haven't been able to eat them. And tonight, you know, Heather didn't feel like cooking, so she threw one of the pizzas in. And I'm looking at that pizza, and I hadn't eaten dinner yet because I came back in the studio, and I'm starving. And I'm looking at that pizza, and I'm like, it's right there. It's calling me. I can do this. And I can jump right in. I'm like, nobody's going to, Heather's not going to care. But it was a test. It was a willpower thing for me. And I'm standing right over that pizza, and I told Heather, I was like, she's like, honey, you've got tremendous willpower. And I'm like, yeah, babe. I said, see, I look at this pizza like women, babe. See, if I can say no to this pizza tonight, I can do shows without you and be okay. Because yeah. I can say no to the pizza, I can say no to the girls.
That's funny.
But oddly enough, the pizza's still sitting there. So, you know, I haven't touched it. I hope it's not, but it might be.
It's great to have a partner who's supportive. I'm going to be doing the film festival circuit for Teresa Sario Alive Again, and you know, I'll hop on a plane, and most of the time my wife isn't with me, and she trusts me, and you know, it's a beautiful thing. It's one less stress when you have somebody who's behind you and trust you. It's one less issue to deal with, you know.
Yeah, she's really the leader of Team Ortega. You know, she does a lot of the behind-the-scenes stuff, you know, between her and my manager, Adrian of Mex Productions. You know, we got a lot going on, and there's a lot of little things behind the scenes. You know, Adrian helps to manage my Facebook account and put, you know, promotions up there. If I can't get to it, you know, not usually, but all the interactions with me and everyone else is me, but some of the posts, you know, when he's promoting shows or when I'm promoting shows, you know, he'll do that sometimes for me if I can't get to the computer. But it's just, we're learning to work as, you know, a well-oiled machine, and, you know, they're learning what I like, what I want released, what I don't want released, also, you know, the label that I'm with, you know, they're wrapping things up with them. And so we've got some things that we're working on as soon as this album's ready to drop. And, it's great, man. She's a big part of this. And I know I'm talking in circles a lot tonight. Really, I don't know why I feel kind of nervous tonight for some reason. But,
You're just speaking to a worldwide audience of several thousand. Don't let that make you nervous.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you mentioned reaching people in other countries. You know, my engineer producer, Rick Hendrickson, he'll break down the demographics of this show, and there'll be like 20 different countries, and there'll always be like something like... there's like two people in Yemen that are listening, and I'm like, those are the two hippest people in Yemen if they're listening.
It's crazy how it all works out, you know, like where these people are. But I mean, you've got to love technology, man. I love technology, but it's no friend of mine, man. You know, if something's broken on the computer or anything that technologically, you know, I just can't mess with it, man. I just can't mess with it. I walk into a room and the computer's just shut down. So
I'm kind of a technophobe, which is ironic considering, you know, I do a net radio show and I'm constantly promoting on the internet. But I'm limited in my skills, but I try to make it work for the ones that I have anyway. But,
well, to my mom, I'm a tech. You know, I can turn the computer on and she thinks I can do everything with it. So.
Yeah. My mom thinks the screen is the computer. She hasn't figured out that, you know, she wouldn't know how to turn the thing on, but, anyway.
Wow.
You know,
so,
she,
you know, I guess,
you know what she thinks that's funny? I'll go on YouTube and my mom will come and visit once in a while and she'll pick out these obscure jazz names, like play Slim Gaylord, and you punch it in on YouTube. There he is, you know, and it's amazing. It's like the world's biggest jukebox, you know,
easily. Well, you know, soon enough I'll have some stuff on there. Speaking of promoting, man, you know, so it's what I do. April 4th, I'll have my debut video for my song I Can't Wait. I haven't spoken with the director since he started editing. I know he said he got some really good footage. This video is going to be a pretty steamy video. At least the way it is in my head, it's going to be steamy. If this guy can make me look good, then we're good, because the girl that we had in the video is beautiful and she was great, and some very interesting scenes that we had together. So we'll see if they actually make the cut. But that's going to debut. I'm having a premiere party April 4th in Kansas, because I'll be back in Kansas to do a show April 6th. But April 4th is also the same day as my album release. So we're just going to have a big party in Kansas, and That's, you know, for those of you in Kansas, April 4th at Reed's, 7 p.m., the world premiere of the video, the album release, one big party. That's on a Wednesday night at 7 p.m. There's no admission. Just come on in. There's no age limit or requirement. Just come on in. And then Friday will be great. Friday's the show. We have a meet and greet going on, I think, at 3 o'clock Friday afternoon. And then the show is at 7 o'clock. And then after that, we have an after party at Bullfrogs Live. So if you buy a ticket to the show, you get your, that same ticket will get you into the after party at Bullfrogs Live. Then the next night, that same ticket will get you into the Ortega Championship Wrestling, April Ass Kicking. I think that's the name of the event, which is OCW, and it is the Ortega Championship Wrestling. It's my brother's company, and it's a company we started when we were kids, man. We just started wrestling, and I'll be doing the national anthem, and I don't think it's going to end there, Evan.
There you go. Okay, so final question. Who did the greatest version of the national anthem? Was it Whitney Houston or Marvin Gaye?
Yeah, oddly enough, I haven't heard Marvin Gaye's version.
Really? Oh, man. I
have not heard that.
Okay, Roger. Evan's giving you homework. After the show, go to YouTube, punch in Marvin Gaye doing the national anthem. It's unbelievable. Wow. You can barely recognize it. It's amazing. It's amazing.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'll definitely check that out.
Classic. That's like the debate. Who did the greatest national anthem, Whitney or Marvin? So on that note, we're going to wrap it up. Please plug your website, any other...
I want to give a shout out to my daughter Tay. First off, I got to give her a shout out before she goes to bed. Other things coming up. Facebook, R&B Pop Writer. You can find me at R&B Pop Writer. Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Shows coming up March 28th at Sullivan Hall. You can find all my information on the on my social networks. I also have a show April 6th. March 31st, I'm doing a Macy's promotional event at Willowbrook Mall in Wayne, New Jersey. And then June 6th, I'll be in Miami for Athlon Chance's book release / Nuka's on the Block Cruise Kickoff Party, which is also a fundraiser for Team Betty and Let's Get This Re. So there's lots of things going on, and I couldn't be more excited. So thank you so much for having me. Ro-Rose, I love you all. I will probably see you all on Twitter in a few minutes. But that's about it, Evan. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. One of my favorites, Roger Ortega. And let me get a quick couple of plugs in before we leave. Teresa Sario, Alive Again, aliveagainmovie.com. Yours truly, the producer. And we will be appearing at the Gasparilla International Film Festival. That's in Tampa, Florida, as well as the Women in Film Festival, which is in Miami. So those are two major events. And we recently screened it for the U.S. military. And that was also a moving experience with the veterans watching the film as Teresa, who lost her leg to an impaired driver. She sings for wounded warriors and trauma victims worldwide, and that's pretty much the theme of the film. And we're very proud of it, and we have high hopes for it. And as I said earlier, we're doing the film festival circuit, and hopefully we'll get it out for the world to see. So that's what we're building towards. And without further ado, folks, check out the store at legendsradio.net. And, of course, tune in each and every Wednesday, 7 to 9:20 Eastern Standard, for some of the biggest names in showbiz. And once again, thank you, Roger. Really do appreciate it.
Thank you, Evan. Have a great night.
And you too. And that'll about do it, folks, for Legends Radio. Special thanks, as always, to Rick Hendrickson, our engineer-producer. And without further ado, this is Evan Ginsberg signing off.